Hi, and welcome to the Pardon My Parsing podcast. This is a different episode today. My co-host, Kelly Marsh, has passed away. It's hard to convey exactly who he was as a person and who he was as a person to me, but there are very few people that will come to your aid or help you when you are in need. And there are very few others that will help you when you're just pursuing a dream or when you're doing something for the fun of it. And they show up and they're there for you. And, you know, Kelly and I, when we started this podcast, talked about it, and he was encouraging, and then we started it, and then he fell in love with it, and he pushed me on it, and so it's been a collaborative thing, and it's interesting the kind of effect that he's had on me as a person, the effect that he had on the show, the fun we had. It's been amazing. And what I'm sharing with you today is that we actually did a bio episode, and we had been talking about it for a long time, and it was something that we had recorded, and I just hadn't found the right time to post it. And I re-listened to it, and it's really just kind of an amazing episode, and there's a lot of stories of Kelly, and there's an interesting kind of look into who he was as a person and how he cared about everybody around him. In that's encapsulated in that episode, and for that matter, it's done in a framework that we set up for this show. And so it was sad, it was amazing, but at the end of the day, re-listening to the episode, I felt, I don't know, happier that I knew Kelly more, and happier a little bit that more people would know his kind of, not his full story, but kind of more who he is as a person, or know him better. And so I want to share that with you today. Sometimes I watch that five countdown and I'm like, here we go. Hey, welcome to the Pardon My Parsing podcast. My name's Charlie Sauer and I'm joined by my co-host, Kelly Marsh. How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm delightful. I'm ecstatic. Everything is perfect. Nothing could be better.
Kelly?
Yeah.
Are you really okay? You can bleed twice. Is somebody making you say this?
I feel fine. No, I'm feeling good. There's no, you know what? Things actually are in a pretty good place. We've been through trials and tribulations. All of us have, but yeah, no, I'm feeling really good. I'm liking where things are.
You're wearing a, what'd you say? Is that a Boston flat cap?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting my education on hats on this.
Yeah. I have several of these. The flat cap I like because you can go out and when you're an older gentleman with some graying hair and a little bit of chubby cheeks, it doesn't look as sloppy as my preferred baseball cap does. And I don't mean that all baseball caps are sloppy because I wear a lot of them. But it's just a little bit. Let me just step it up my game a little bit. That's all. And there's a nice company out of Boston that does a nice job, makes a good hat, and they fit my head well. And that's the criteria. I have a weird fat head, and it has to fit well. And so, I got a few of these.
When you find them, when you find that company, you stick with it.
Find what works. Yep.
Well, today, I mean, you know this, but for everybody else, we've been talking about this for a while, and we're finally going to do one. We are going to do a bio episode, and this is going to be the Kelly Marsh bio episode.
Wait, when did I authorize this? I don't know what you're talking about.
Look, I'll draw. I will just keep messing with you. We'll see how many different of these surprises we can throw at you.
So what we decided we would do is, I picked a very short speech. I actually believe it's a segment of a larger speech, but I picked a short speech that was influential and important to me. And I was going to go through that. And we'll talk a little bit about the speech. It's going to be a little bit less about the speech and a little bit more about, you know, who I am, what my background is, how we got to this podcast, and maybe just give you some information that otherwise, you know, we don't really talk about ourselves a whole lot on the show. There'll be little tidbits, but today the speech is from my favorite
Before we get into the speech, we get into it. So we do speeches all the time, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what the show is. We go current, speeches.
Current events and historical ones. Yes. Yeah.
And, I mean, you kind of think about these things in a similar way to me, and I think of them in a similar way to you. We've now done, you know, more than 30 episodes.
More than 30. Yeah.
And that's a lot of time together on this. It's a lot of time working together and talking together. I don't know what I would have thought what speech you would have sent me, but this was not the speech that I thought that you would send me. And I also really like the speech.
Yep. So let me tell you what the story is. When I was a kid, growing up in the 70s and the 80s, I wanted to be Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey, if you aren't of a certain age, which would be somewhere around my age in your early 50s or late 40s or older, Paul Harvey was a broadcaster for decades. He hosted multiple radio programs. Interesting character with an interesting cadence and just a fantastic way of presenting the news. And he also had a program you may have heard of called The Rest of the Story. And so I grew up for a couple decades. My father was the one that introduced me to Paul Harvey. And at noon, he would have like a 20-minute news show. And he did The Rest of the Story, which was like a 2-minute program that would air on these AM radio stations. It was just fascinating, interesting stuff. I had the fortune one time of submitting a story to Paul Harvey that he actually used when I worked in radio. That was the highlight of my very, very short career in professional radio. And so I picked Paul Harvey's So God Made a Farmer. And if you're familiar with it, you probably remember several years ago, it was used in a Super Bowl commercial for pickup trucks or something. Now, I'm going to read the speech, and it ain't going to be anything as good as what Paul Harvey could do, because I don't have the cadence and the ability. But this is a presentation he gave to the National FFA organization, probably in the late 70s or early 80s. I'm not exactly sure of the time. So I'll read the speech. We'll talk a little about it. Then we'll talk a little bit about Kelly Marsh. Does that work for you, Charlie?
That works for me.
All right.
I'm interested to hear you read this. I've read it. I have it in my head. I don't think that I didn't listen in preparation for this. I didn't listen to Paul Harvey's version, but I think that I have his cadence in my head.
So his is better than mine.
But I'm happy to hear the Kelly Marsh version.
All right, here we go. And on the eighth day, God looked down at his planned paradise and said, I need a caretaker. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, and go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board. So God made a farmer. I need somebody with arms strong enough to rustle a calf, yet gentle enough to deliver his own grandchild. Someone to call hogs, tame cantankerous machinery, come home hungry, have to wait lunch until his wife is done feeding the visiting ladies, and tell the ladies to be sure and come back real soon, and mean it. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die, and then dry his eyes and say, maybe next year. I need someone who can shape an axe handle from a permissive sprout, shoe a horse with a hunk of car tire, who can make a harness out of haywire, feed sacks, and shoe scraps, and who, planting time and harvest season, will finish his 40-hour week by Tuesday noon, and then from pain in the back tractor back, put in another 72 hours. So God made a farmer. God had to have somebody willing to ride the ruts at double speed to get the hay ahead of the rain clouds, and yet stop midfield and race to help when he sees the first smoke from a neighbor's place. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to tame lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink comb pullets, who will stop his own mower for an hour, splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. Had to be someone who'd plow deep and straight and not cut corners. Someone to seed, weed, feed, breed, rake, and disc, and plow, and plant, and tie, and fleece, and strain the milk, and replenish the self-feeder, and finish the hard work's week with a five-mile drive to church. Someone who'd bail a family together with the soft, strong bonds of sharing. Who would laugh, and then sigh, and then reply with smiling eyes. When his son says he wants to spend the rest of his life doing what Dad does. So God made a farmer.
Gah! It's a cool speech.
Now, I've never been a farmer. I grew up in a really rural area. I know farmers. I had friends who were farmers. How you doing? Yeah. I did that whole thing, and now I can't talk. I have lifted, hay bales. I have cleared trees. I have never splinted the leg of a meadowlark. I've been to fires. I've seen my share of things. I grew up in a little small town in western New York State, south of Buffalo, just north of the Pennsylvania border. And I mean like a mile north of the Pennsylvania border. A couple episodes ago, I wore the hat to my favorite restaurant in that town. The town is Portville, New York. So when you talk to me, I'll tell you that my hometown is Portville, New York, but I'm from Houston, Texas. And I'm from Houston, even though I'm not a native Texan, but I got bloodied into it. I survived multiple hurricanes, including Hurricane Harvey. And I helped out multiple people. And I think that's what this speech means to me. If you take this again, Harvey was talking to the FAA, and so it's good to relate it to a farmer. But if you take the spirit of this, it's kind of how I want to lead my life. Now, mm-hmm. I'm never really ultimately always successful. It's a difficult thing, but I like the idea of you need to have someone in your life, or you need to be someone in your life that's there to do challenging, difficult, and sometimes gently challenging and difficult things, right? This wasn't the, hey, you need to be able to know how to chop wood, which I did for my entire youth. You need to know how to put a roof on. You need to know how to get in a bar fight. That's not what he was saying. There's strength in delivering your own grandchild and stopping what you need to do to go run and help a neighbor. Or the meadowlark, right? There's strength in that, and it's just how I kind of would like to live my life. So I grew up in this rural community that I love, and was influenced by a number of people. Two of whom, most important, my father and my grandfather, and they were do-it-yourselfers. My grandfather had an entire workshop. We in 1983 we moved back to the little hometown where my dad grew up. And we moved next door to my grandparents. And in between was a little brick building that used to be the AT&T switching station for the town until the flood of 1972 from Hurricane Agnes put 6 feet of water in it. So my grandfather bought the building and converted the first half into an apartment and the second half into his workshop. And he had everything. What kind of tool do you need? Do you need a chainsaw? Do you need a ball peen hammer? Do you need a mallet? Do you need a bracket? Do you need a screws? And do you need a table saw? And do you need a drill press? And do you need an air compressor? He had everything. And he used to tell me, if we don't have it, you don't need it. So my dad and my grandfather did everything. They all, if I could get to 8:30 on a Saturday morning without my dad waking me up, that was a good day. Because I could hear them. My bedroom was right next to the shop.
Yeah.
I could hear them out there. They're out there at 7 or earlier. I'd hear the rotary saw going. I'm like, oh, we're doing something today. Or I'd hear the ladder go up on, And eventually my dad would come up and knock on the door and say, we're going to need a little help, which for me was a 30-minute warning because I'm grumpy as heck when I get up in the morning, right? So I did all kinds of things. Charlie, let me ask you a question. You ever been on an aluminum ladder with a propane tank in one hand and a flamethrower in the other, melting the ice off of a roof of your grandfather's house? Because I have.
I like that one. That's a good one.
He's 80 years old. He's standing down there in the ground telling me, don't burn the house down. What had happened, he had an ice dam, so it gotten warm enough, and the water had flowed underneath the shingles, and then it froze again, and it started lifting up the shingles, and now he's getting melting from the heat in the house, and it was leaking into the bedroom upstairs. So I had an ice dam that I had to melt with a flamethrower, a propane tank. I was 18 years old, right? So I grew up in this great little town. I ended up wanting to be Paul Harvey. I listened to the radio all the time. I started listening to the radio probably in the late 70s. When John Lennon was killed is when I started listening to music seriously. You would find me, these headphones like this, you'd find me in front of a record player listening to either the Beatles. I eventually found my mother's record collection, which included Jimi Hendrix, which I said one day, who's this guy? And all of my teenage years, all my high school friends would be like, this guy was stupid, Hendrix crazy, right? I love Jimi Hendrix. And got into music big time. So when I was about 15 years old, I went and got my first real gig in radio at the little radio station in the town city of 18,000 people that I live near. And my job was to rewind tapes and erase tapes. That's what I did. I erased things. You take a magnetic eraser, because at that time it was all magnetic tape, right?
Yeah.
And so carts, they would call them too. They look like 8-tracks, if anybody knows what that is. And one day they said I could do the news. And I did the news, and I probably was terrible, because when I told my girlfriend I'm going to be on the news, they didn't play mine. Gary, the professional who's there, did it. I must have really stunk. So I ended up at college, went to the Fredonia State University, a SUNY school in New York, for audio production. And I was pretty good at it, actually. In fact, it may be the one thing I'm really good at overall, other things, other than just being, you know, generally an awesome dude, you know. And when we learned in the early 90s, we were still using magnetic tape, reel-to-reel tape. And so you would have to sit in front of a reel-to-reel, and you would rock the tape back and forth with your headphones, and you'd find the place that you need to make the edit. And then you'd take a China marker, and you'd mark the magnetic tape, and you'd get a razor blade, and you'd physically cut the tape, and then you'd cut the second part, and then you'd tape it together with specific reel-to-reel tape or whatever, and hope that you did it right. And I was pretty good at it, because I could close my eyes. This is the truth. I closed my eyes. I could see the sound. I know that sounds weird. Maybe it doesn't sound weird now in the digital age, because you can see the sound. But at that time, I could see the sound, and I loved it. I loved doing it. And my buddies would be like, I can't make this stupid edit. Can you please help me with this? And that was a great feeling. So I was 25 years too late, really, to the industry. Read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, and you'll understand what that means. You've got to be the right age, the right time, the right skill set, the right place to be the expert and the awesome. The Steve Jobs only happens if he's that person at that time, you know, doing these things with the right attitude. I got a job in radio right out of college. Got a second job a few months later, doing mornings at an oldie station that I got to program all the music for. The boss came to me one time and said, yeah, I got a phone call from one of my friends, and they say that you're playing Layla by Derek and the Dominoes like every day. I'm like, yeah, it's 8 minutes long. I play it right after I eat breakfast. I'll find another song. It's Don McLean, American. I'll play Don McLean, American Pie. It's like 7 minutes long.
There you go.
Can you guys infer what I'm speaking about, right?
Look, when you got to go, you got to go. You need a break.
Yeah. And so later on, I worked at a powerhouse country music station. Swear to God, WPIG, the Big Pig, 95.7. The Big Pig. And that was tough because those songs are only 2.5 minutes. This is when Garth Brooks, Martina McBride, all these people were coming up in the early 90s. Country was huge across the country. So the early 90s into the mid 90s, worked there, worked the overnight shift. And then I decided, well,
Wait, we're in the mid 90s here. Where was the first time frame, the first radio gig was mid 90s or early 90s?
And my very first when I was 15 would have been probably 1985, 86.
Okay.
I'd been doing radio for 10 years.
All right.
And I had been doing radio successfully for since probably 89. Where, you know, people would actually let me turn on a microphone. But, you know, back then, well, I probably got paid about $3.75 or $4 an hour. And I graduated college and worked at these stations. And I finally decided, you know, I wanted to do something else. So I ended up in Terre Haute, Indiana, at Indiana State University to get my master's degree in broadcasting, radio, TV, film. And I went to Terre Haute for two reasons, and boy, who's going to listen to this one? Because I'm going to tell you the truth. I went to Terre Haute, Indiana for two reasons. It was time to get the heck away from one specific situation. a girl. And it was time to get out of New York. So I moved to Indiana, and they let me teach. And that was a key thing I wanted to do. I actually began teaching public speaking in 1995. Drove my mom's SUV, listening to the Goo Goo Dolls, Name, that they played every 15 minutes because of the big hit, Name, on the radio. So every 15 minutes, that song's on the radio, and moved to Terre Haute and taught two public speaking classes every semester and went to school and just loved it. The teaching thing and the public speaking thing was just wonderful. I loved it. I know I had a little bit of skill, and they trained us up a little bit. And then eventually I graduated early. I graduated early from both undergraduate and graduate. I don't recommend it, by the way. As my father once said to my daughter who is smarter than I am and is an exceptional student, why would you want to graduate college early? Well, I did both of them. So I graduated in December.
You had always wanted radio.
Yep.
And you had had some opportunity to turn on the mic and be on the radio.
Yep.
What was the feeling of like teaching? Was that the same as radio? Is it more personal, or did it not feel quite the same?
Radio felt to me, I would talk to one person when I was on the radio. It was an invisible person, but when I would talk, it was one person, but we would be engaged in my mind, at least. That person couldn't respond. When you get into the classroom, there's response. And I will tell you that the truth is it's more like stand-up comedy for me when I teach the classes. It's not, I mean, the education isn't important because it always was, but you get to interact with people. And I liked that a lot as well too. You get feedback, negative and positive. You can see people's reactions. I might have been known for doing some silly things in the classroom. Stuck around Terre Haute for another semester. After I graduated, they hired me as an adjunct professor. I started teaching business communication. And then I decided time to go find a job. So I think I sent out like 75 resumes to be a college professor. I didn't hear a whole lot. This would have been summer of 97. So I ended up back at my parents' house in that area in New York. And I was up on a ladder putting vinyl siding on my parents' lake house. My mom walks out and says, there's a phone call for you. And it was from this great little college in Liberty, Missouri, called William Jewell College, and which turned into like the best job I've ever had in my life. And they were looking for a one-year appointment. They wanted to hire someone who would come out, teach broadcasting, teach public speaking, and then be the faculty advisor and general manager for their on-campus radio station. Literally my dream job. Like, oh, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. So I went out, I interviewed with the faculty, met wonderful people, friends, still friends of mine to this day. They hired me before they let me get to the airport to go home on a 1-year contract. By the end of the first semester, they hired me for a 2nd-year contract. By the end of the second semester, so still in the first year, they'd given me the tenure track job. Had a master's degree, which is the terminal degree for what I taught. But I've found a lot of success, and I made it 5 years. The radio station was awesome. It's a very, we changed the format. They were playing Christian contemporary music. We changed the format to alternative. We were the only alternative radio station in Kansas City at the time. That did generate a little bit of controversy among some folks, but the listenership went up, involvement in the station went up. I have friends, one of them who's sitting here right now in a blue shirt talking with me, that I met there at that university, that college, still to this day. Wonderful people. Love that job. But I'll also tell you, too, met my wife at that university, at that college, too. Been married for 22 years. Yes, I married a student. We're only 5 years. It's only 5 years difference, okay? It's been 22 years. I got an almost 20-year-old kid. Everything's fine. It worked out fine, okay? So that was a great experience. But I got in my head, I probably need to get a PhD. Like, I want to be a professional educator. I probably need to get a PhD. So I said, oh, let me apply at Mizzou. I'm going to apply at University of Missouri. So I applied to University of Missouri School of Journalism. I got a full ride scholarship. So in February of 2002, I went to the college and said, I'm resigning at the end of the semester to go to school full time. We were going to move to Columbia full time. Like 3 weeks later, my wife says, hey, we're going to have a baby. Hey, I just quit my job. Don't we need insurance? So I had gotten connected with a local technology software company, doing some education with them, paid a little bit better than teaching summer school. And so I was kind of frozen. I didn't know what to do. We really just sat around for like 2 or 3 months. And finally, the company had been recruiting me, and I could have gotten my teaching job back. They would have let me come back for sure. But I went and decided to go work for the software company based out of Kansas City, and ended up having some success there, but only worked for a year. Then I went to Mizzou, and this is important. I did not know that the University of Missouri was the first journalism school. And I did not know how prestigious and important it is. If you look at the people who are on TV or writing magazines and newspaper, there's a huge list of incredibly impressive people that have graduated from the University of Missouri School of Journalism. I was kind of looking for Terre Haute in Indiana State. I wasn't looking to be, you know, I knew it was going to be research. I knew it was going to be more theoretical and studying. But man, it was different than what I thought. So I made it through all of my coursework. Did very, very well. We had a 6-month-old when we moved there. But I never finished my dissertation. So I'm what you call PhD ABD, which stands for all but dissertation. I sometimes call it all but the dollars, because still had to take out loans to pay for like housing and food and stuff, right? So I am one of the people who has a child in college, and I'm still paying my student loans. Shut up, Joe Biden. Anyway, so moved on from there, went back to work, couldn't find a job teaching. That actually went to a job. They were going to offer me the job, and they said, you know, we can't pay you enough money to live in the town. Oh. What? I'm getting my PhD. What do you mean you can't? What? So I got stuck in O'Hare Airport in Chicago in a snowstorm on a Friday. And that reminded me of my previous job with a software company, which involved a lot of travel. So I called my old boss back, and they hired me back on Tuesday with a raise and a title promotion. And worked for them for another year, and then I went out and went to be self-employed. Now, you listen to this show, and every once in a while, something funny gets dropped or something unusual gets dropped. We got to talk about this now. Charlie will say something along the lines of, well, who knows where you were in the world at that time? And then I'll say something like, well, when I had security clearance, right?
Yep.
Stand by, everybody. It's not as exciting as you think it is, okay? The job I had for 18 years was basically a road warrior who went out to client sites and was an educator working in the healthcare industry. And I worked all around the country. And I've got almost 1.7 miles on United Airlines, and I have well over 3,000 nights in a Marriott hotel. What does that give me? Well, I've been around the world to amazing places on my points and miles with my family on vacation. And all I had to do was leave for 230 nights a year. I was gone, right? My child was raised by my wife while I was largely gone Monday through Friday, 42 to 45 weeks a year. So yeah, I've been around the world. I've been in amazing places and I've seen a lot of things and I know a lot of wonderful people all around the world. Today is my very good friend from Singapore's birthday. So, you know, what that led me to was, oh, I'm sorry. And then eventually I went to work as a government contractor, which allowed me to get security clearance. It's not as glamorous as you want in that industry. And now today I'm self-employed like I've been most of my life. And I bring to the show, my intent to bring to the show is a vision and a view of how I want to live my life, which is where Paul Harvey's So God Made a Farmer comes from. I'm not saying that I'm perfect in that in any way, shape, or form. Also, we're big sports fans in the house, and my sports teams, I guarantee you, you hate a couple of my sports teams. One might have cheated like the rest, half the league, and the other one might be the most successful college football program in all of time, and one is the Buffalo Bills, and if you say anything bad about the Buffalo Bills, I will fight you. 40 years as a Buffalo Bills fan is not an easy thing to achieve, but yeah, I support the Crimson Tide and the Houston Astros and the Buffalo Bills, and if you follow me on the Twitters or the Facebooks, you'll see that. But what I bring to this is I try and be an honest guy. I am politically, certainly economically conservative, and probably socially more libertarian. I just don't really care what you do with your own private life, you know, but I want my money back. Like, stop spending my money on dumb things, right? And I don't bring that out all the time. I try and be fair. I'm watching the football game. If it's a penalty, you know, if they did something wrong, I'll call it out, even if it's on my team. I try and be that way in life. So when we talk about Joe Biden, or we talk about Donald Trump, or we talk about Ronald Reagan, or we talk about Jimmy Carter, Charlie's most famous favorite president of all time. I try and be genuine in what I really think, as opposed to being shaped by my political view. But, you know, there's no way to not be shaped that way.
I want to tell you a little bit about what you bring to the show, because I do think it's what you were pointing at, but it's hard to say it yourself. And I think it's in this speech a little bit. It's that you do have a farmer personality. Kelly and I, we met at William Jewell. I followed him online, and it was interesting to see his like travels. I mean, the guy was always at different, you know, telling funny hotel stories and travel stories and whatever. And then he all of a sudden ended up on the East Coast. And then for that matter, all of a sudden COVID happened. So I was, you know, we were going to get together and boom, the world kind of shuts down and I haven't seen him in forever. So he's not the first person I'm like, hey, I'm in this COVID bubble, but do you want to come over? But as soon as COVID started easing, he came over, we had lunch in my office and I was working on just kind of a crazy project. But, in the guy that worked with me had moved back to Kansas and it was a project that I needed a hand with.
Yeah.
And he showed up and helped me do like this crazy filming that I needed to do. And he was somebody I could ask and he showed up and did it. And not only did he do that, but we had fun while we were doing it. So like, to me,
it's kind of that like genuineness and that ability, that willingness to help. And not only are you doing that, but you bring a talent with you when you do things that is really neat to watch and just be next to.
Yeah, and I remember we did that video. I had no idea what was going on, but I was like, yeah, okay, start recording now. Okay, got it. Oh, nope, that one didn't go very well. Let's do it again. And I enjoyed that. And you're right. It had been probably since 2001 or 2002 since we had seen each other, but we had stayed connected on social media. And that was a time in my life where I really appreciated you. You were the one that reached out, and I really appreciated that. And, you know, it's blossomed into this. I remember you calling me and say, hey, I want to do this podcast. And I was like, yeah, let's do a podcast. I love this idea. And the first episode, I was like, I don't know what this is going to be like. And now I'm all in. I love this show. And I love this show. We're lo-fi, right? I mean, this is not super highly produced, and that's okay. It's actually kind of good in some ways, in many ways. And I think if people appreciate and listen to this show and they listen to the expertise, Charlie does the work, by the way, everyone. He's the guy that really puts in the time, and I show up and ride his coattails. And I listen to every single episode. I haven't listened to an episode yet that I've been anything other than I could listen to that again. And I really appreciate all the effort. I appreciate you bringing me in. It's a fun time. I enjoy it. And I enjoy spending time with you here virtually. I don't know how many hundreds of miles apart we are. But it's a great program, and I'm all in, and I look forward to whatever crazy, you're not going to tell me what speech we're doing next episode. He did that to me once. He's like, no, I'm not telling you. You're just doing it. Okay. Yeah. We'll wing it. Yeah. Whatever it takes.
No, it's,
so, yeah.
Look, and that's why there are different people. I heard a theory about life the other day that there are order Muppets and chaos Muppets.
Yep.
And I think that we are both kind of tweeners where we're and because an order Muppet couldn't deal with the fact that I wouldn't tell him what the speech was.
Right, right.
And a chaos Muppet just wouldn't ever do the speech. Like, they'd be like, oh, we're going to wing it while we're on air. I don't think that we can do that, but it's fun to be able to have that relationship with you. I liked hearing your story today. There was several parts that I didn't know. And, you know, I'm a nerd. I really like this speech. And I don't think that I didn't know the Paul Harvey portion of your life or any of that. So I think that this is great. And I'm glad to know you more. Hopefully our listeners are as well.
Well, if they're not, they've stopped listening by now anyway. So I mean, they've moved on to lunch or, you know, whatever they're doing. So
for those of you who are still listening, hit that like and subscribe button. We promise not to have Kelly talk about his life anymore.
No. Well, I'll give you one more thing. I'm on the tweeters at that Kelly Marsh. No one's following me. I'm invisible. So follow me.
Kelly has a goal in life. He wants a blue check mark. So.
I need a blue check mark. Can I just get one thing nice in my life, please? Just a blue check mark. I'm going to be like Elon Musk. I want a blue check mark.
That's our next goal. I've always wanted the like ambassador plate because I think my dad told me growing up that like he knew somebody with an ambassador plate and they could just stop in the middle of the street and not get arrested.
Excuse me. Look at the plate. You can't touch me. I'm an ambassador. Now,
I have now, you know, become an adult and know people that, you know, have ambassador plates or could possibly give me one. And it turns out that that's not quite true. But at the same time, I like the blue check mark because it is possible and does give you something. We can't park in the middle of the road with it, but we can hold it over other people. So,
yeah. Well, I want to thank all the listeners. And like I said, like Charlie said, hit the like and subscribe. Check out some of these previous episodes. There's some really awesome things that we've done back here. I will just say I apologize for the last 30 minutes of self-indulgence, but we thought it would be a good idea for people to start to understand who we are a little bit. So thanks everyone for listening. It does mean an awful lot.